My Classic Album with Mike Norris is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of My Classic Album and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to a very special edition of My Classic Album, looking back at some of the greatest albums in music history. Well, normally that's the case. Today, we're going to be just taking a little bit of a look back at the podcast itself. I'm Mike Norris, and whether you're hotly anticipating our 50th episode or this is your first ever listen to My Classic Album, thank you, welcome. For those who may be unfamiliar, My Classic Album is a music podcast that's been around for nearly 5 years now, and we welcome musicians and singers onto the show to talk about their all-time classic album, that album that inspired their own journey into music. And what's really exciting is that we are approaching our 50th episode, so in just over a week's time, we'll be speaking with Ian Haugland, drummer of Swedish rock band Europe, about his chosen classic album, Rising by Rainbow. Over the last 5 years, we've welcomed the likes of Dizzy Reed from Guns N' Roses, Jen Majura from Evanescence, Damon Johnson from Black Star Riders, to name a few. And it's just a fantastic opportunity just to see what makes people tick, just to see what music inspires other great musicians. And it seemed like a really nice opportunity to be able to look back and reflect on 50 episodes of My Classic Album. Anyone who listens to the show regularly will know that this very much started out as, you know, just an opportunity to talk about music with my friends. So for it to build in the way that it has and to get the kind of guests that we've been getting and the kind of guests that are coming up too, that's really, really exciting. So our 50th episode is coming up in just over a week, but I thought this is a nice little bonus episode just to reflect on the last 49 episodes and beyond is going to be a lot of fun. In just a few minutes, you'll hear my conversation with Paul Stevenson, presenter of another fantastic podcast if you're into classic rock, Vintage Rock Pod. Paul took some time out to chat with me about essentially the story of My Classic Album, how I got into loving music so much in the first place and how the podcast came about, and we've interspersed it with some of my favourite moments from the podcast with some of my favourite guests. So that's coming up in just a few minutes' time. So if you are new to My Classic Album, really nice opportunity to get a flavour of what the podcast is like and what to expect. If you've listened to us for a long time or perhaps joined us along the way, a nice chance to relive some of my favourite moments too. Before we get into that chat with Paul, just a bit of time to touch on something cool that's happening over on the social media channels at the moment. So if you are a fan of My Classic Album or you like the sound of what you hear today, make sure that you follow us and like our pages on social media. So get yourself on Facebook, My Classic Album with Mike Norris, and like the page. Follow us on Instagram at My Classic Album Podcast, or you can follow us on Twitter at MCA_podcast. Like I'd said, there's some cool stuff going on Instagram at the moment. Again, in celebration of 50 episodes, we have whittled down all of the albums that we've covered. We're kind of pitting them against each other in what I've been calling the 50 album showdown. So every day on Instagram stories, we've been putting two matchups on of a 50 album tournament. And as I speak now, you know, we're hurtling towards the quarterfinals. So legendary albums like Battle Out of Hell, Blue by Joni Mitchell, Animals by Pink Floyd, to name a few, have already been eliminated. So, you know, some of these matchups have been really fiercely contested. Thanks to everyone who's been getting involved. It's been awesome. And I've been checking my feed constantly to see what albums are going through and which ones are going out. You know, I think just this morning as I'm talking, rumours just sneaked through over Metallica's Black Album, which my heart went with that. I love both albums, but Metallica were winning by quite a stretch and rumours made an amazing comeback. If you want to get involved in the showdown, make sure that you follow at My Classic Album Podcast on Instagram and check the story every day. That's going to culminate on the 12th of June. I'm going to be announcing the winner of the showdown on our 50th episode on the 15th of June. So I just want to remind everyone and thank everyone as well who's taken part. Absolutely, keep voting, keep getting your voice out there. I want to say which of our 50 albums is your classic album, and we're getting ever closer to finding out, so that's awesome. But now let's get stuck in, and I think this is going to be exciting because I think people have been wanting to know for a while the story of my classic album. I've had a lot of people asking kind of how we got started and just asking general questions, so this seems like a fun opportunity to do that. So I'm going to hand over to a very good friend of the show, as I'd said, Paul Stevenson from Vintage Rock Pod, to be able to kind of grill me a little bit on the story of my classic album. So thanks very much for joining us, Paul.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, as I'd said, you know, thank you very much for taking that time out to join us and to be able to give me this opportunity to be able to kind of share with our listeners kind of the story of my classic album, as it were.
Absolutely. I'll get to the bottom of it all. I'll dig to the deep of it and try and find everything that we can for you, listener. Don't you worry. So, yeah, Mike, let me just take over at this stage then. To begin with, your accent. You're very clearly a northeast of England guy. Tell us about your upbringing then. Whereabouts are you based?
Yeah, so funnily enough, I was born in Ashington, which is kind of sort of Northumberland way, so, you know, near Morpeth, Cramlington, for the UK listeners who know, obviously that's kind of north of Newcastle, you know, so I was born there kind of in the height of all of the troubles with the miners. Funnily enough, this came up in an episode recently that we did, and then when I was about 3 years old, we moved down to Durham, where I've lived most of the time ever since. I did have a bit of a spell living in Sunderland when I was at university, bit of time in Newcastle, but yeah, I've been in Durham ever since.
See, that's what we have in common. I went to university in Sunderland as well, so there you go. More things than you know.
There you go. Awesome. What years were you there?
2000 to 2003 for me.
I think I was just after. It's 2004 I turned up, so I'll have just missed you.
I heard you were coming, so I got out of there quick. No, I'm only kidding. So rock music then. We all love rock music. It gets into our soul. It gets under our fingernails. It's what we love. It's what we have. So where did your love of rock music come from? Was it something you heard? Was it something you were played? Did it come from your family? I mean, give us the story. Where did it begin for you, your love affair with rock music?
My earliest memories come from when I was about sort of 4 or 5 years old. And for me, they all start with Queen. So I think anyone who listens to my classic album, they're probably sick of me talking about Queen at this stage. I seem to bring them up a lot. I remember just rifling through my parents' CD collections at the time. So they had a lot of Elton John, David Bowie. Obviously, some Queen was in there. All of Rod Stewart they were really into as well. And I remember quite vividly watching something. I don't know if it was some kind of like telethon, like comic relief style thing. And they played Bohemian Rhapsody. It was the heavy rock bit after the opera section over like highlights of the best of what it had been at the time. And I just remember just having this watershed moment of like, what is that? That sounds amazing. So of course my parents, they had Greatest Hits, which of course Bohemian Rhapsody's track one, and they had Innuendo, which was the album obviously just before Freddie died. It was their most recent album at that point. So we're talking about 92. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of took this all in. Bat Out of Hell as well. My mum is a huge Meatloaf fan. So Bat Out of Hell was an album that I was listening to constantly. Bear in mind, I was only 5 or 6 years old at this time. Just really taking this music in, just loving it. And then I think just as I got older, it was just this curiosity in terms of when I'd hear these names or these songs and I'd think, I want to know more about these bands. And my parents would just buy me a greatest hits album of a random band or a singer for Christmas just to see what I thought, just to see if I liked them. So I had this massive collection of music. And I think as time's gone on, that's just sort of developed, that curiosity's developed where I'm just one of those people, if I like something, I like to dive into it and know everything about it. So I think that's where that curiosity comes from.
Absolutely. And was it a lot of classic rock? Because obviously you're talking kind of probably mid-90s, late 90s sort of upbringing yourself when you're getting into this music properly. So was it classic rock? You're talking kind of 70s, 80s, you mentioned Queen and Meatloaf and all that sort of stuff. Is that what you kind of first hooked you properly?
Yeah, so that was the genesis of it, definitely. So again, you know, I know they had this like awesome double album of like the best of Bowie. And again, it was an Elton John one, another double album. So again, it wasn't just the music taste that it was just exactly what I loved. And it was being played in the house all the time. My sister was obsessed with Madonna, so that was the direction that she went in. But for me, it was, you know, certainly it was Queen, it was Bowie, it was Elton. It was, you know, that 70s, 80s. Classic rock, absolutely. Yeah. So our next track is Killer Queen. We've touched on Killer Queen quite a lot already. It's our first single from the album, part of a double A-side with Flick of the Wrist, which we're going to be talking about in a little bit. Written by Freddie, it reached number 2 in the UK, as we said, and made Queen a household name overnight,
What are your thoughts on Killer Queen, and is it a good example of that classic sound that was developing with this album?
Perfect Queen. If someone said to me, give me one Queen track that is Queen, and I think Killer Queen would probably, well, definitely top We Are The Champions. Yeah, because I just think Killer Queen has just got all that daring side that they were still really investigating. You know, as I said, you know, it's just an astonishing thing. And also, when you look at the mapping of Killer Queen, you know, the arrangement, it doesn't follow the path of what pop songs are doing, which are, you know, verse, bridge, chorus, breakdown, out, you know, or maybe a little solo out. You know, Queen were putting in these cheeky little bits and going out on, you know, weird end, like the ending of Killer Queen. What a weird ending. It goes out on a repeat with a little hook. You know, it's, you just wouldn't do that these days. So it's pretty untouchable for me. You know, it's the jewel in the crown, pretty much, as far as singles go. Ironically, held off of number one by David Essex. David Essex was humongous at that time, and he was outselling everybody. So one for the trivia there.
Completely unrelated, but it's just reminded me of something from kind of my sort of teenage years. There was a chart one week where it seemed like loads of the rock songs were going to kind of top the chart. We're talking about 99, 2000. And I remember listening with my friend who was really excited because he was so sure that Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus was going to be number one. He was sitting there like listening to the top 40 in a way that we just don't do anymore. Number three was Papa Roach, Last Resort. Number two was Wheatus, Teenage Dirtbag. And number one was Atomic Kitten, Hole Again. And he was so angry that he phoned the radio station and ranted at them for 10 minutes. But it just made me think there, when you think about kind of what songs kind of get kept off number one by others, it was just something I'd been thinking about.
And so going through your teenage years, did you stick with that sort of music, or did you move on to, I'm just thinking at that time you've got Britpop and all that sort of stuff coming through in the 90s, haven't you? Did you move on to that sort of stuff at any stage?
I think I appreciated that later. So, you know, I think, again, I can happily listen to stuff like Oasis and Blur. But I think for me, in my teenage years, so as I'm coming into like 13, 14, that's when new metal was really big. So things like Limp Bizkit, okay. Linkin Park. Yeah, yeah. And that's what I really latched onto. And I think at the same time that was going on in the charts. So then that's, you know, you would hear people say, well, if you like all that stuff, you know, what about things like Metallica, Ozzy Osbourne, Guns N' Roses? So then that was another rabbit hole I found myself going down that, you know, again, I remember that moment vividly of hearing that opening riff of Sweet Child of Mine for the first time. I can remember exactly where I was, what I was doing. I had to stop the CD player because I was like, holy shit, what is this? This is amazing. And then, I mean, obviously we've heard it millions of times since, but there's nothing that kind of replaces that first time. So for me, that's where the metal stuff came from, I think, in my teenage years. And again, it was a lot to do with the crowd I was involved with as well, that they loved like Rage Against the Machine and Green Day and all of that stuff. That sort of started to complement me expanding from classic rock into some of these other things like metal and hard rock and all of that stuff.
So we'll move on to Sweet Child of Mine. So this is not only my favourite song on the album, but it's actually my favourite song of all time. And it's a big part of how I got into Guns N' Roses and all the other bands and albums that followed. I remember very vividly hearing it for the first time and hearing that riff for the first time and how I felt and what it meant to me. Do you have that kind of love for Sweet Child of Mine, or do you prefer some of the heavier songs on the album?
They're all so great, like, it, you know, but I think it hit me just like anybody else with the video and the riff. I mean, that riff, I've heard too that Slash just hated it and thought it was really cheesy and silly, and someone was just like, no, that's great, and it's become one of the most famous, you know, guitar riffs of all time. But for me too, playing guitar, and still here we are, almost 30 years later, or more than 30 years after that album came out, and you've got people that are still playing guitar and they're like, ooh, the Sweet Child of Mine, can you teach me the riff to Sweet Child of Mine? It's one of those Smoke on the Water, Crazy Train, just super, super iconic rite of passage guitar player things. And I remember learning that riff, and then you play it and someone, oh wow, cool, you know, and playing it behind your head. And
and I mean, it's funny, you've talked a couple of times about how you'd seen Slash recently. It's been a good few years since I've seen him, but I did see him at a festival, and the moment that he started playing that opening riff to Sweet Child of Mine, it was like goosebump central. It was just an amazing moment. And I mean, I've been to so many gigs over the years, but that for me is kind of one of the key moments for me that I'll always remember.
Yeah, I think there's like at least the opening riff to Welcome to the Jungle, or the opening riff to Sweet Child of Mine. Like, there are certain or Metallica's Inner Sandman. You know, there's certain riffs that are so iconic. They're just imprinted on a generation's mind, and they just keep going from generation to generation. The Hotel Californias, you know, those kind of. And so it's just like when that moment happens and you're there in a group of people seeing that, it's just the energy, you can't replicate that energy. You know, it's just, it's exciting. It's oh God, here it is, you know?
And then did the musical instruments follow from that point? Did you delve into the world of playing the music?
I tried. I think anyone was, you know, I would love to be able to play. I don't have the discipline. And I think that's the irony that I know when we've had guests on the show in the past, sometimes that conversation can get quite intense in terms of kind of musical theory or, you know, kind of beats per minute, all of this kind of stuff. And I think that sometimes when I've confessed, actually, I don't play an instrument. I know Jen Majura from Evanescence was actually quite shocked. She'd said, this is the most intense discussion I've had about music from someone who doesn't play music. So, you know, save singing along in my car, which obviously I'm very guilty of doing, and not well, I might add. And, you know, and I think maybe one day I often think about buying a bass guitar. I'd love to learn bass. Mm-hmm. But my musical ability, in spite of my love of music, my musical ability is pretty poor, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, so we've got your love of music. We know where it came from. We know that the styles and the genres you've gone through. We know that you're absolutely useless when it comes to picking up an instrument. So where did the idea of the podcast begin then? So where did you think, do you know what, I'm going to sit and speak to famous people and talk about what albums they like and what albums I like and that sort of stuff. Where did all that kind of come from?
So I guess there's two parts to that. So one is how it started and one, it's kind of how musicians got involved with it. And I think, to be perfectly honest, and I've been quite open with this in my personal life and on the podcast, the reason I started my classic album was that I was quite severely depressed, in all honesty. So I've had struggles throughout my 20s and my early 30s. I had a lot of struggles with my mental health. Mm-hmm. I worked in retail, which I was very unfulfilled in at the time. And I was experiencing quite strong panic attacks, all of this sort of thing. Fast forward to sort of 2016, life's a lot better. I'm happily married. You know, everything's great in that area. But again, I'm just feeling quite depressed, feeling quite unfulfilled in kind of other areas of my life. And I thought to myself, what's something that I could do that I've always wanted to do that I've kind of fancy trying? And I think it's one of those things, anyone who's listening to this who thinks they'd like to start a podcast, it's so easy. It's the easiest thing in the world. It feels like...
tell them that.
It seems like... When people say to you, like, so how do you do it? How do you start? I know a friend of mine's recently started a podcast kind of based off what I've been doing. And it's, I think for me, it gave me that fulfillment. And it literally started, I thought to myself, right, well, and it started with friends. So you'll notice anyone who goes back to those early episodes, the majority of them are with people that I know. So the first one was with my friend Robin, who was an actor I met while I was at Sunderland University. And so I rang him up and said, let's, you know, what album, if we could just talk about an album for an hour or so, what would you talk about? And he'd said Revolver by the Beatles, which seemed like a perfect place to start, to be perfectly honest.
We're going to come to the elephant in the room now.
Well, what would that be?
The big yellow elephant in the room.
The big yellow elephant, yeah.
So, Yellow Submarine. Now, and until we started discussing this, I didn't realise that you had such a problem with Yellow Submarine.
I do.
Now, obviously, you've already gone into the reasons why Ringo's singing it and the reason that the song
I don't
came
hate
to
it
be.
For him. I just think it's an incongruous song right in the middle of it in this album. Mm-hmm.
So I've got two questions related to that. One, I think you're going to laugh your head off, actually. So one, again, it's another song that's really just permeated popular culture.
Yeah.
You know, I do think it's very much a novelty song.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that say that kind of there's a political agenda in there, or that there's other interpretations, and I tend to think there really isn't. I tend to think it's just a nice novelty song.
It's a fun song. Yeah. It was done because the only reason why it was given to Ringo is because he has limited vocal abilities, and it was just an easy one for him to sing. But again, listen to it. Listen to all the sound effects that are in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got John Lennon doing the sort of they have fun doing it.
Yeah.
And all those sound effects that the engineers came up with to just add to it. And there's screeches and all sorts of noises that are on that track.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, I was in Russia in 2011 and 12. And at one session I was working with Russian school kids, teaching them English. And this song, Yellow Submarine, is quite well known in Russia, even for kids these days. And I used that song. I took the lyrics and I took out certain words, and then the kids in Russia had to find the correct word. I gave them options, alternative words, and then they had to find out, they had to find the correct word, and then they had to tell me what the word meant. So, you know, it's a song which, yeah, it had its uses for me. But no, it's just a song. It shouldn't be on the album. Rain should be on the album, or Paperback Writer.
An interesting question, and it's a question I hadn't thought to ask now that you brought it up, that during the sessions for Revolver, that as we've said, Paperback Writer and Rain were part of those sessions. It was released ahead of the album. Yeah. But they plumped for Yellow Submarine over over those songs.
Yeah, I just honestly don't know why.
And then it got to a point, and this is quite a funny story actually, that obviously the Instagram page has always done really well in terms of reaching out to prospective guests for the show. And I'd been up in the loft, it was my mum and dad's loft, and they'd found all their old LPs and albums, and they'd brought them down, and they were like, oh, why don't you have a look through these and see if there's anything that you want. And after 30 years of them being in the loft, they were all, bar one, they were all completely intact, not a scratch on them. The only one that was literally shattered to bits was a Gary Glitter album, which I found quite ironic and amusing, in all honesty.
Less said about that, the better, yeah.
Exactly. So I put this on Instagram as a bit of a joke, and Reed Turchy, who's a fantastic blues guitarist from the States, he'd obviously, you know, he'd messaged that he'd appreciated that joke, he thought it was quite funny, and then he became the first guest I'd had on the show that wasn't someone that I knew already. Mm-hmm. So then it kind of built from there, because I thought to myself, well, I was just going to do this with friends, but now there's musicians who quite like this idea and want to kind of to roll with it. So I'd say the last time that we occasionally get a guest on that isn't a musician, but it's very rare in this instance. There's usually some kind of connection. So I know Jacqueline Dillon, for instance, she was on our Battle of Hell episode. She was very close friends with Jim Steinman and worked with him for many years. So that link was there. Usually it is musicians that we get on. And I think me coming from the non-musical background and them coming from the musical background, that can make a nice kind of compliment, because they're passionate about this album from a musical standpoint. And I've done all that research and able to kind of either support what they're saying or maybe kind of teach them something new about this album that they've loved for so many years.
And so how do you go about picking guests for your show then? I mean, do you kind of just randomly pick people? Do you look for someone to have a connection to something you want to talk about? Or what's your thought process around bringing people onto your show?
So for me, a lot of people are reaching out now to appear on the show, which is lovely. That was always the aim. I thought if people are messaging and want to come on, that's great. I think for me, it's, you know, if I like their music, that goes a long way, especially now that we're playing their music. That's not just, you know, I think if we have a guest who's coming on the show, I want to be able to promote their music and say, look, we're talking about classic albums, but this guest is fantastic. Download their EP, download their album, whatever that is. And that's one of the things that I've loved about it lately. I think for me, what I find randomly is if I'm on social media, it's sponsored posts. So a lot of the time now that the Facebook algorithm knows that I do a podcast and that I speak to musicians, I get a lot of musicians and like albums and bands appearing on my sponsored posts. And I think, oh, I like you. I'll drop you a message. And, you know, people are usually so enthusiastic. I do sometimes take a punt. I do sometimes think, you know, with kind of the bigger artists, I think the worst thing someone can say is no. So Dizzy Reed from Guns N' Roses is a huge example of that. Didn't think for a second that he'd even entertain coming on the show. And of course he did, and it's one of the most listened to episodes we've ever done. So there's a bit of a mix. There's sometimes that gamble of, you know, those bigger guests like a Jen Majura or a Blaze Bailey or something like that, where we think, yeah, let's see if we can get them on. But then these independent artists, these up and coming artists, they're so passionate about music and they're such characters a lot of the time, and they've got great music to show to the world. They're more than happy to come on, and, you know, I've made some really great friendships and, like you say, connections with some of these guests that I still talk to kind of long after I interviewed them.
So Lou used many of the UK cast, including Richard O'Brien as Riff Raff, Patricia Quinn as Magenta, and, as we've said, Tim Curry returned as Dr. Frankenfurter in the final movie. How important do you think that was in kind of keeping the essence of the original stage show?
I think really important. I think Tim Curry is I love Tim Curry. I actually almost ran over his dog once. And it was both exciting and traumatic. Like, he just had this teeny little fluffy dog. And it's just like, you know, one of those weird things about living in LA is sometimes you just look up and people that you've loved your entire life are there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just, there was this teeny little dog ran into the street and I stopped immediately when I saw it. And then I looked up and Tim Curry was walking it and I couldn't even speak. I was just like, and he just sort of like waved it off and walked away.
You know what it is? I've been doing this podcast for nearly 3 years. Sometimes people just love the album and they've never met the person before. Sometimes they've been lucky enough to work with them or meet them in some capacity. That is my favorite story I've heard in 3 years.
I almost ran over. Oh my God. Well, first of all, I never want to run over any living thing. No. So I'm really glad I didn't. But also, like, to top it off, if I had run over Tim Curry's dog, I don't think I would have gotten over that. Unfortunately.
And I think what works really well with your format is the fact that guests, musicians, these sort of people, they talk about themselves all the time and talk about what they do all the time. So to come on and talk about something they're passionate about themselves and a love of an album of a different artist or an artist that inspired them or an album that they grew up listening to or something like that is just, it's so refreshing for them to do that it just works so well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's nice sometimes, that some of them, if they've listened before, they know exactly what the drill is and they really like that. There's the odd person who's come on, maybe didn't quite know what the format was going to be, and we get to the end and they say, Mike, I've had a hell of a time here. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. I know Damon Johnson, who I know you've had Damon on the show. We've had him on twice now, talking about Synchronicity and Highway to Hell. And both times he's just come away being like, Mike, I've just had the best time. Thank you so much for having me. And that means the world, because, you know, he'll do loads of interviews promoting his albums and his tours and stuff. But if he's having a fun time for a couple of hours and talking about that music that inspired him, that's a nice kind of break for him as well, to be able, like you say, to kind of talk about his influences and get excited about them.
So we're going to move on to, without a doubt, one of the craziest songs I've heard in my entire life. and arguably the craziest song that we've ever tackled on My Classic Album. And that's not to say that it's a bad song. I'm going to preface that. And that's Mother. So if you've never listened to The Police beyond the hits and you're listening to this, just brace yourself in before you put this one on. So it was written by guitarist Andy Summers. It's his only songwriting credit on the album, and he handles lead vocals on the song. It's a track that certainly divides fans. Before we get into what makes it so crazy in both sides of it, what are your thoughts on this song?
It was just this explosion of aggression. You know, for me, I drew a bit of a parallel between Andy's song Mother and Roger Waters' Mother on the Wall. But it's like Andy took it to this really angry, aggressive place. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that when I listened to the album, that I listened to Mother in its entirety. There have been times, Mike, that I have skipped it. But, you know, I've listened to it enough to value what it is on its own merit. Again, man, it's still kind of snotty of those guys to throw a song like that on an album in the middle of these other just landmark songwriting events like King of Pain and Wrapped Around Your Finger. It just makes me laugh. I just laugh at it oftentimes because I just go, wow, how awesome is Andy Summers to write something like that? And again, the whole kind of atmosphere around our discussion, Mike, is, you know, the turmoil within the band in the making of this record. This would be their swan song. This would be it. When Andy walks in and goes, hey, guys, I got this cool song. Check it out. It's called Mother. Let me play it for you. Oh, my God. I
feel like anyone who's not heard this song is probably like, I need to go and listen to Synchronicity now. I need to pause this podcast and go and listen to this song because I feel like we've built it up so much.
I couldn't agree more. If please, anyone that's listening, pause the podcast, go listen to the song, and then come back, and then you'll have a greater appreciation for what we're saying.
Now, you've thrown out some big names already. Now, give us the one name that you've got on your show and you've gone, this is it. This is amazing. I can't believe I've got this guy on my show.
I have mentioned Dizzy Reed. I think for me, because we're being such a huge Guns N' Roses fan, I think that was a massive one for me that, you know, I knew he had an album to promote and thought we'd just try it on the off chance. I think as well, if we go right back to episode 7, so that was 40 years of Rumours. So again, we coincided that with the 40th anniversary of Rumours by Fleetwood Mac. We'd got Neil O'Donoghue, who runs the Fleetwood Mac fan site, because again, we were in those early stages of, you know, I wasn't a musician every episode at that point, and me and Neil had a really awesome chat about that album. And then just on the off chance, and this is probably the cheekiest I've ever been, I'd heard about Ken Calais, who'd engineered the album, writing the book about Rumours, couldn't find any kind of like website or anything for him. But what I did find was his personal Facebook. And I never do this now. I don't know what possessed me to do it, but I just dropped him a message and I was like, we're doing this podcast about Rumours. Do you want to come on? And I was absolutely shocked when he replied to be like, I'd absolutely love to. And for me, that's one of the proudest moments to be able to, I mean, Rumours is one of my favorite albums of all time, to be able to dissect that album with Ken, who was there and he saw all of this unfold. And again, Ellen Foley singing on Bat Out of Hell, singing on Paradise by the Dashboard Light, that opportunity to speak with her again was a huge one. So I think while we have had these big guests, like I say, Dizzy Reed and Jen Majura stand out to me as the two where I kind of had to kind of brace myself in my chair because I thought, how on earth have I managed this? I think it's when there were these people who were connected to the album that we've done in those episodes, like Bat Out of Hell and Rumours. That's huge because again, that's similar to kind of your podcast. They're telling your history. You know what I mean? They were there. They have those experiences, and that's amazing.
So as we both know, Rumours is turning 40 this year. That being said, there's loads of albums turning 40 in 2017. What is it about Rumours, in your opinion, that makes it so special?
I think, you know, what really made it special was the fact that I mean, I walked into this project as hired as an engineer, and within about 15 minutes the band was fighting. I've seen, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash fight, I've seen Kenny Loggins and Jim Messina fight, but this was a weird, I've never seen couples fight. They were throwing champagne at each other and screaming obscenities that you cheated, you lied, and so this is what the first day of a record was going to be like. And I thought, how is this going to work? As we're supposed to make, you know, happy music and people, at least music that makes people happy, other people. So I think the fact that they pulled together and put that whole thing aside and said, you know what, okay, we're all breaking up, but we need to make the money. Let's make a great record. So, and that was Stevie's. So they made a really great record. They made a really great record. And the thing I didn't realize until later, until I wrote my book, was that the things that they wrote in their lyrics were all about, you know, you cheated and, you know, go your own way. And it, so it made it, they agreed to put all that aside and make a good record. But, you know, it made it even harder when they had to, you know, work on the lyrics and hear these lyrics being pounded in their head at 110 dB and to sing harmonies to them. I think it was a very, very heroic thing that they did for a bunch of young kids, you know, to sit down and put all that aside and put their talent first and make a love song. Making a record about love when they're all breaking up. So, and I think something that happened that we record, that we got in the recording was stayed, persevered, and still touches people's hearts today. So, you know, I can't really explain it, but I was there for it. So it was kind of a special treat for me. I figure I was lucky. I drew the winning number on that album. So I'm thankful for whatever I get.
Absolutely amazing indeed. Now, this might not apply to you, but have you ever interviewed anyone to be on your show or a prospective podcast episode and it just did not work out? It didn't feel right, that there was no chemistry. Have you ever had that experience at all?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think the closest we've come, and again, it wasn't anything about chemistry or anything like that, we had someone, and I've mentioned this a couple of times in the hope that maybe kind of some of friends of the show might be interested in covering this album, and it might happen in the near future. And again, I'll not say who it was, because again, it was nothing to do with them in terms of why it didn't work out. But, you know, it was a shame that they'd picked Aladdin Sane by David Bowie, you know, one of my favourite Bowie albums. I was really excited to do it, and just it just didn't work out in terms of like being able to get us together to do it. And at one point it looked like it was going to happen and then it didn't. And it was just quite disappointing. And in the end, it was one of those things where I thought, if I keep pestering this guy, he's just going to get fed up with me. So I just let it lie. I've never had anyone where I've thought, oh, for goodness sake, you're hard work or anything like that. I think those connections, because you're talking about an album they love so much. I think that's a huge part of it. I think that you know, they say that you appreciate that you've done the hard work to present the album in a way that it should be. And they love that and they appreciate that.
Good stuff. And just talking about albums then, I mean, you doing the hard work, you doing the research and things like that. There must be albums that people nominate and you think, well, I've never heard of that. Or you've perhaps heard the name, but you've never really dived deep into the sound of it. Have you come across any albums yourself that you thought, man, this is amazing. How have I not listened to this sooner?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's because obviously if you listen to the first series of My Classic Album, these are all like, I think for the run of like the first like 10 episodes or something, all of these albums were like in like Rolling Stone's 500 greatest albums of all time. And it was like this kind of sort of quality. And then obviously as we diversified, particularly with metal albums, which, you know, I'm a huge metal fan, they don't always score on those charts. And I think now that we've kind of got people's trust in terms of that we've done albums like Rumours, we've done albums like Revolver, Sticky Fingers, that sort of thing, that now we've got kind of a listener's trust, I'm more than happy to go down like a less travelled road. So two examples that immediately jump out to me recently, one would be the album that Jen picked, which was Sex and Religion by Steve Vai. Mm-hmm. I'd not really listened to much Steve Vai at all before our conversation. And then she'd even said to me, this might be quite a weird choice, mind. That was how she put it. Listened to the album and fell in love with it straight away. And I'm still listening to it now. And that's one of my favourite episodes we did, just because of the conversation around it. And with that in mind, and obviously talking about, you know, at this point he's 19, he's very much new on the music scene. We've talked about kind of his journey since then. How influential do you think that Devin has been on the kinds of bands and singers that we're talking about, the genres that we're talking about?
Let's keep it simple. I do not know a single other artist name that comes close to Devin. He's got a very unique way of understanding and producing and feeling music. And again, it's about how you write music. Why do you write music? Why do you play music? And I feel like Devin is just like Steve Vai. These are guys who don't do it for the money or the fame. They're doing it for the expression and the passion of music. And that's the beauty of it for me personally. And I think Devin is, yeah, you know, we do this funny thing. Like every now and then I'm texting him and sending him pictures of quokkas.
Okay.
these Australian animals, right?
Okay.
Because quokkas are just the happiest animals on the planet. And I love quokkas. So every now and then, every, I don't know, 3-4 months, I'm just sending him a text with a quokka. Because I think it's just, you know, we have a funny friendship. You know what? As a matter of fact, I should do it right now while we're on this podcast.
I love that.
Devin, okay, here you go. Devin, and now I have to find a picture of a quokka, and I'm going to send him a picture of a quokka right now. Where are you?
Perfect.
Yeah. Where is it? I have to have a picture of a quokka. I don't have a picture of a quokka.
Is it always a different one?
Yeah, of course. I'm following on Instagram. I'm following this quokka hub. Quokkas of Instagram. I just love these animals, and they're so positive. Okay, here we go. Okay, quokka. And I'm going to accompany it with a little short text like, have a beautiful day, Devin. Okay, sent. That's amazing.
I want to say when we started this, I didn't think that while talking about Devin, we'd be texting him just quokkas, which is brilliant.
I know, it's surprising. But that is why this album means so much to me, because, you know, the connection that I have.
As we're talking now, obviously I know this will go out a bit later, but as we're talking now, I'm promoting the episode around Cactus's album One Way or Another. So Boone Froggatt from an awesome band called Otis joined me for that one. Again, and I was fully upfront with him. He had two albums. He'd said either Cactus One Way or Another, or it was an album by Faces. And I thought to myself, well, I've heard of Faces. I haven't heard of Cactus. Let's check this out. And as I say on the episode, within 10 seconds, I was like, we need to do this album. More people need to hear this album. So I think that's nice because it, and as was one of the aims of the podcast, expanding my musical repertoire and knowledge as well, that I'd never heard of Cactus. Obviously, I'd heard of Carmine Appice, and but I hadn't listened to Cactus. I didn't know the story. And I mean, that episode's fantastic in terms of diving into their story and checking that out, and the fact that the band, in some form, are still together to this day. So yeah, so it's great sometimes, and sometimes those classic albums that maybe you hadn't given a chance. So for example, before I started this podcast, I'd not really listened to any kind of Pink Floyd at all.
Okay.
Now I love Pink Floyd. Part of that to do with Frank Carducci, obviously Choosing Animals, but then other stuff in terms of, you know, again, like I love Dark Side of the Moon, I love The Wall, I love Wish You Were Here. These were albums I simply hadn't listened to 5 years ago. So for me, it's that massive growth. And that's the most rewarding thing, arguably, that I'm discovering all this music, even if it is 40, 50 years old in some cases.
Absolutely. Now, we're recording this as you approach your 50th episode. Can you see yourself doing a 100th episode? Can you see yourself going that far down the line and this carrying on and on and on?
I think now more than ever, yeah. And I think it's funny because, as again, I've talked about my mental health. That's always been a thing. And I actually work in mental health now when I'm not doing the podcast. And
that's great.
So for me, it's always a priority. And that's why long-time listeners will know we did 20 episodes and then we took a bit of a break. And that was just, I was just struggling quite a bit with my mental health at the time. I didn't feel like I felt like if I was producing episodes of the podcast that they'd be rubbish, to be quite frank, and that I needed to take that step back. Similarly, we took a break in 2019, but that was more, I wasn't at that place, but I thought, I need to get my priorities in order here. Again, I was embarking on this new career, there was a lot going on, and I thought, right, if I take this step back and then come back when I'm ready, again, the podcast will be better for it. So I'm not afraid to take those breaks. And ironically, I thought, right, 50th episode, end of June, is that a good time to take a break, even just for a couple of months? And that's been my plan since October, since we came back, thinking, yeah, I'll take a break. And as we get there, I'm thinking, no, I'm enjoying myself too much. I'm going to keep going. So for me, I think I see that 100th episode, that feels even more possible than it ever did. You know what I mean? So that's not me saying we definitely will. But I think as long as my mental health stays intact, which it has for a long time, and I'm continuing to enjoy it and people are continuing to listen, I don't see why it couldn't keep going, really.
And as much fun as it is doing these podcasts and things like that and speaking to these wonderful guests that we have on and hearing the wonderful stories and delving into the wonderful music, just in terms of producing podcasts, it's not as easy as some people might think. I mean, there's these huge podcasts that have hundreds of thousands of listeners and they've got 10 producers and social media teams and marketing officers and all this sort of stuff in the background, whereas the likes of you and I, it's almost a one-man band sort of thing. And there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes and people recognise. And you've spoken very honestly and openly about your mental health. I mean, how does that affect you? Because obviously you've got a family, you've got a job, you've got a podcast, and it all brings pressures together. Now, we want the podcast to be something that's fun for people to listen to and something for you that's fun to do. How has that kind of impacted you kind of positively and negatively in producing these podcasts?
I think that's it. It's the balance. So for me, and again, obviously, I work in mental health. That in itself is a very stressful job.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to, I mean, obviously, I've been working from home for the past year, but you know, whether I'm out in the community or I'm working at home, I need to be able to close my laptop at 5 o'clock. I need to, you know, shut the door and be like, yeah, that's it, I'm done. And the podcast is a really good way for me to do that. So I find it's a very positive influence. And I know my wife, I mean, my little daughter's only 3, but, you know, she sees the setup in the spare room and she comes in and she pretends that she's doing a podcast and all that kind of thing. And my wife's so supportive. Like, we often just sit on a night and, you know, she'll be sitting watching TV or whatever it is and I'm tinkering away editing the latest episode, or if I need to come up here and record an episode, there's never any pushback with that. She's really supportive. She's really proud of how it's going as well. And so for me, it's a really positive influence. And again, towards the end of series one, if there's a point where it's becoming too much. So again, because it's constantly on my mind. So every day I'm like, oh, I wonder how many downloads we had today. I could do some editing later on. I'll need to email this guest to arrange this date or whatever. If there's a point that becomes too overwhelming, that's the point where I need to put the brakes on and I need to say, right, I need to stop, be it for a couple of months, the last time it was over a year. So it that depends, do you know what I mean? But I think for me, 99% of the time, it's a positive influence and it helps me switch off. So I'm able to say, right, well, you know, work was really hard today or whatever it is that was going on, but that's fine because I've got a 2-hour conversation about Rush that I'm halfway through and I need to get that sorted. So plays a really positive role in my life, definitely.
So we
can move on to a very different song now, which is Adam's song. I mean, we've talked a lot about mental health on other episodes of My Classic Album. I think kind of music and coping with mental health, really, they go hand in hand. It's a subject very close to my heart. And I believe that these kind of songs that deal with kind of depression and suicide and loneliness can save lives, because suddenly you don't feel so alone when you're listening to them. And somehow in the midst of all these kind of hilarious pop punk songs is this deeply serious, sometimes haunting song that it's likely just, it's saved so many lives, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I know that a lot of folks are tend to be reactionary about it and say that, you know, it sort of causes depression or things like that. But I would say it's quite the opposite. Music to so many is catharsis, and having been able to listen to that song during a time of my life when I was struggling with depression is something that I can say is meaningful and deeply so. And just like many others, I'm sure music can get you through to the point to where you might not have made it otherwise. So you can't give enough credit to good music for saving people's lives.
And another really positive thing that comes back from making podcasts like this is the listener feedback as well, isn't it? And obviously the odd idiot, but on the whole, the feedback that we get from putting out our podcast is fantastic. I mean, how's that affected you?
I'd never underestimate that at all. So even if that's just literally seeing how many people have downloaded a podcast, do you know what I mean? Let alone someone sending you an email or a message to tell you how much that they enjoy it. And I think what I've found lately is that, obviously, we're on all the social media channels. Instagram, particularly at the moment, seems to be this like hub for podcasting in general, but also this podcast. So a lot of people reaching out, you know, obviously when we're announcing episodes, when we're airing episodes, all of this stuff, people excited about, you know, when's this album going to be done, all of this kind of stuff. And it's the nicest feeling in the world. And I know when I came out of uni, I had brief experience of local radio. It was very fleeting. But I think it's far more rewarding, because I'm getting to play what I want to play. I'm getting to talk to who I want to talk to. And the feedback I'm getting from people is like, you know, we're really enjoying what you're doing. Keep going. When are you doing this album? Is usually the message that I get. But again, a lot of musicians and a lot of kind of musically minded people get involved. And sometimes someone will say, there've been a couple of occasions where I've had a musician say, well, when are you doing this album? And I think, well, come on and do it then. Come on, you come and do it. And then we do. And that's, you know, so it's, and that's what's great about it, that, you know, after coming up to 50 episodes, the well's not even that dry, you know. So, you know, there's still loads of albums. It's very rare that someone says, can I do this album? And I'm saying, we've already done it. Mm-hmm. It does happen, but there's still hundreds, if not thousands of albums that we could potentially cover kind of over the months and years.
Okay, and then just reaching out to your gold standard kind of guest then. I mean, if you could interview anyone for your podcast, who would it be?
I've got a hit list. So
interview. I didn't say shoot. I said interview.
So I think for me, so the certain guests in terms of, and they are the more contemporary artists rather than kind of your iconic legendary artists. But so for me, anyone who's listened will know that I'm a huge fan of Blackstone Cherry, who are an amazing group from Kentucky, who in the UK, you know, these guys are headlining arenas and festivals and stuff. And again, a couple of the guests I've had on in the show are kind of in the band's orbit. So, you know, they've kind of toured with them or they're good friends with them. So any of the guys from Blackstone Cherry, just again, their influences are just fantastic. I'd love to get any of those guys on. And singer-songwriter, again, British and certainly Scottish listeners will be very familiar with Amy MacDonald. I would love to get Amy MacDonald on because I've loved her music from Dot. I think certainly there's a few kind of guitarists from other metal bands, like if anyone knows Rich Ward from Fozzy and Stuck Mojo. Again, I've heard him on podcasts. I think he would be a great guest to get on. So I find that, you know, obviously we do get some of these really big, you know, the legendary, you know, you could reach for the stars and ask for a Slash or a Brian May or something like that. But I think there's something to be said for kind of the generations that follow, that admire those artists coming on the show and talking about those guys. I think that I can geek out with them as well, rather than, I think if I had Brian May, I don't think I'd know what to say. I think I would just stutter for an hour. So,
and that wouldn't be the best podcast, would it? But no. Brilliant. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you a bit more, a bit better than we did before, Mike. And your podcast is fantastic and I love listening to the episode. So please, please carry on doing it.
Oh, no, thank you very much. And thank you for this opportunity, because it's been really nice. And I know a lot of people wanted to kind of know a bit more. And yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the 50th episode will be online very soon. So keep an eye out for that.
So as we hurtle towards that 50th episode, we're days now away from it, which is crazy because I've been planning so much of this for a long time. So as we know, the winner of the 50 album showdown will be revealed. You know, I've also got a little fun treat. If you're a fan of the TV show Parks and Recreation, make sure you're listening around the beginning of the show. There's a really kind of fun little thing I've had the opportunity to do there. But I've just been storming ahead with kind of upcoming guests and upcoming albums, which is exciting. And you hear that at the end of my conversation with Paul, that I was thinking about having a bit of a break after episode 50 and just the opportunity to interview some of these guys that I'm having on the show in the near future. It was just too much of an opportunity to miss. So absolutely really excited for that. And that's it, just for a little mini episode of my classic album, I guess. As many as I get anyway. Anyone who's listened to the Moving Pictures episode will know it was about 2.5 hours. But thank you very much to everyone who's joined me over the last 5 years, or nearly 5 years anyway, to talk about classic albums, to listen to us geek out about classic albums, and most of all, just to kind of share your love of music, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day. So thank you very much to everyone who's listened today. Again, if we've piqued your interest, if this is something that you've just discovered along the way, get yourself to www.myclassicalbum.co.uk to find out more about the show. And of course, on Podnos, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. All of our previous episodes are on both of those sites, as well as where you listen to your podcasts. So absolutely, thank you very much for joining me today. And Paul as well, of course. Thank you to Paul for appearing on the show. And we'll see you next week for Rising with Ian Haugland, episode 50. Thank you very much. Cheers.